Welcome back to GRBN. I am your sweet and viscous co-host, Mac W. Monty.
And I am your favorite Scylla Buzz, Coach Lucky.
And together we are...
The B-Boys!
Our book this week is Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers, the buzz of the romance community.
One of Pablo Picasso's favorite books. This is popping off the charts in the romance section, giving it all the buzz.
You know what they say, you catch more podcast listeners with honey than vinegar.
Oh, Mac, I don't know if any of our rugby listeners would understand that joke.
Hey, Lucky.
Yeah, what's up, Mac?
What do you call a bee that's been put under a spell?
Oh my God, I couldn't possibly guess. What do you call it?
A bee-witched.
That was very good. Do you know what a bee's favorite haircut is, Mac?
What is a bee's favorite kind of haircut?
A buzz cut.
I don't get it.
Don't worry, I'll just blow this joke up with a bazooka and try again.
Hey, Lucky, who says zub, zub, zub?
Oh, I don't know, Mac, who?
A bee flying backwards.
I actually like that one a lot.
But seriously, folks, we are reading Honey Girl for real, which is a real book by Morgan Rogers. It is.
I'm going to have to behave.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. it's a real book. It's a lesbian romance novel. And we've been looking forward to reading it for a little while now.
This isn't no wannabe.
OK, yeah, that's good. I like the word keeping the puns going throughout the episode. It is sort of limited because the book isn't really about bees. Or honey.
Mac, no need to be a crybaby.
Okay, listen here.
Yeah, sorry, we can take a second. Is that too much?
You can't.
Is that coming out too strong?
Okay, because the intros, the whole B-Boys thing is kind of, we got it. We got it.
But we have
okay.
All the t-shirts that say B-Boys. We have the mugs, we've got the pins, we have to push B-Boys.
I'm going to tank B-Boys to the investors next Tuesday, so if you're attached to B-Boys, it's going to be curtains for you. And your hair, Lucky, a little messy. You might want to get a honeycomb through that. Okay, but that was the last one, all right?
I was saying, I'm using a new product. It's called beeswax. All right, keep going.
As I was saying, this is the Gentleman's Romantic Book Nook, the internationally ignored and domestically tolerated romance review podcast, and we are reading Honey Girl.
That's right. We're back. We've got a new novel on our plates, and this was a scrumptious one-ish.
So normally we would start this by reading the back of the book, but the events of the story are pretty much the back of the book stretched out into 7 chapters for this week's reading. So I thought we could just jump right into the B-cap.
Yeah, I'm really happy with that. Let me just spread my wings and take me away.
Our story begins in Viva Las Vegas, baby, where Dr. Grace Porter wakes up after a night of partying with an extreme hangover, a bride t-shirt, and a wedding ring on her finger.
Nice. Classic.
A classic hangover. She has vague memories of meeting a beautiful woman, spending the night together, and getting married at a schmaltzy 24-hour chapel. In the morning, Grace is left with a photo of their ceremony, a business card, and a brief note from Grace's new wife encouraging her to look her up in New York City. Now, the mystery girl doesn't leave her name, only a card with her radio show on it, which I thought was weird. And here's the entirety of the card. Are you there? Brooklyn's late night show for lonely creatures and the supernatural. Sometimes both. 99.7 FM.
I love it because this is the kind of weird hole that I get into when I listen to podcasts and kind of where I feel like our podcast falls into the niche of like, what a weirdly specific and eclectic show focus. I'm into it.
Well, and it's weird that it's not a podcast because that would seem a lot more relevant. The book takes place in the modern day. This isn't the 90s Sex and the City. So it's kind of strange that she's like an FM radio host.
That's interesting. You're right, because that really indicates that there is A, a group of people who want to listen to it a lot, and B, enough that they want to do it at a specific time every day.
Also, this is the card that they hand out to advertise the show. Are You There? Which is the name of the show. and then Brooklyn's Late Night Show for Lonely Creatures and The Supernatural, sometimes both, 99.7 FM. Brought to you by Burger King. Grace tries to keep her impulse marriage a secret from her friends Agnes and Jimena, but Agnes quickly discovers the wedding photo. She agrees to help keep the wedding a secret from Jimena, and all three of them fly back to Portland, Oregon, Stumptown Pride. The story moves to Viva Las Portland, baby, where Grace works at a trendy tea shop with siblings Mira and Raj. She is discontent with her occupation, which, I mean, she is a doctor of astronomy, come on, and longs to feel the passion of her one-night marriage stand in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be pretty disappointing to have a doctorate and be hired to do astrology readings at a tea shop. I mean, it is just so brutal.
Is that what she does?
No, she works there. She like helps out of the staff. Like she's like
yeah, she works like behind the scenes, I think.
Yeah, no.
Mentioned specifically, because that would be very fitting for Portland is doing astrology readings. That night, Grace has dinner with her father and stepmother, where her overbearing dad, who goes by the name of Colonel, expresses his distaste for her field, her biological mother, her not getting a job after a disastrous interview. The dad basically sweeps into the room just long enough to make her daughter feel like shit, and then he leaves.
Yeah, the dad's a real D-bag.
The Colonel makes the dad from Makeup Breakup look like all the guys from Full House rolled into one. Hold me, Joey. Next, we flash back to when Grace met Jimena. The Colonel apparently had his leg amputated sometime before the action of the novel, and Jimena was his companion at the hospital. Is that a real thing? I've heard of companion animals, but are there companion people? Do you know?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, at least like for the elderly, I know that there are people that go around and help like in a hospice situation where they're older and it's kind of a sick, you know, there's people there to keep company. I believe that's the same thing for people who are in long-term hospital care.
That makes sense. The dad was pretty cold to his daughter. She'd like come to visit every day and he's like, you don't need to come. Turn the radio up and leave. But then somehow Jimena and him get close by watching telenovelas.
Yeah, I like that little dig there. That's a lot of fun. It shows a little bit of a human side to the Colonel, where thus far he's been a absolute robot and a monster. These first chapters, you know, we're talking about this being like kind of, we didn't read the back of the book because this is exactly it. I mean, this is the fourth chapter we're reading, and this is again like Jimena's origin story. Like we're still kind of learning the side characters and everybody who matters to Grace Porter before we even really meet said wife or go looking for her again.
Yeah, Jimena flirts with Grace in the hospital cafeteria, and I put flirt in quotes because she asks her if she's rich and single, first thing. Then she gives Grace the rest of her half-eaten lunch, which is supposed to be somehow, like, friendly or romantic.
That's a hard flirt right there.
And the lunch, by the way, is cold fries and a half-eaten sandwich. So not, like, you know, something you could really easily share with someone. But somehow, despite all of that, they become fast friends, roommates, and soul buddies. They have a very close friendship. I mean, really close.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm still kind of keeping an eye out for maybe a moment later where Jimena is upset that she's married or has some type of feeling she needs to confess. Because it is a very, very, very close relationship.
Yeah, Grace describes their friendship as like, Agnes is my best friend, but Jimena and I will watch the world turn to ashes. That's not something that normal people say to their friends. That's something that like Magneto would say about Professor X. Like, yes, the Juggernaut is obviously my BFF, but when humanity is totally gone, Charles and I will watch the world turn to ashes.
And the X-Men get back and they say, oh my God, Magneto said this crazy thing. And Charles is like, I agree. Yeah, that's our friendship. Sorry.
I mean, sure, I faced him again in battle time and time again, but at the end of the day, I mean, who's going to be there for me? Cyclops, you, Jean Grey, come on, you're the Phoenix.
Mutants will kill everyone, so I mean, I agree with him in some point. Anyway, back to the adventure.
At the end of the chapter, it's revealed that Agnes was a patient of Jimena's too, and that Agnes, and possibly Grace, suffer from a disease called excoriation, a disorder that causes them to scratch and pick at their skin until they bleed. Back in the present, Grace, Agnes, and Jimena are all roommates. Late one night, Grace gathers them both and reveals the truth. She's a married woman, and she kind of likes it. Her friends are incredibly supportive and perform the due diligence that she should have done, and they Google the radio host right away, based on the card. They immediately find out that Grace's mystery wife is Yuki Yamamoto, who has a late-night supernatural radio show in New York City.
I can't believe she never Googled it. Like, there's been a lot of emotional trauma, and one thing we haven't really talked about, the way that this book is written, it's in the third-person perspective, which for the romance genre is something we haven't really seen before, and it's kind of an interesting twist on it, but it's also, like, very, I would say, romantically written. Like, a lot of the thought processes are just filled with, like, simile and filled with just, like, a lot more, like, beautiful writing than we've experienced before. And then you get to the dialogue and it's like, hey, had a good day. But my heart was a burst and my eyes were glowing with the beautiful visage of you.
Exactly.
It's very interesting.
She had roses that danced upon her cheeks and she smelled of sea salt and saffron. But then the dialogue is almost like it was straight out of a really like bad John Hughes ripoff or something.
Yeah, it's a little dry.
It has a very poetic sensibility to it. And I almost wonder if the author, I don't know much about Miss Rogers, but it seems like she maybe has written more serious novels before this and romance is maybe new, because I really like the descriptions. But then when it comes to the like nuts and bolts plot of the romance side of it, I'd leave something to be desired. Like, I like the writing style more than I like the story, for sure. The three girls listen to an episode about sirens and the allure that their song has. Yuki reaches out to Grace on the air, wondering if she's listening, calling her her honey girl. Bzzz.
I was a buzz when this happened.
Now, this is a pretty romantic, cool type of radio show for her to have. Imagine if you got a card like this and you tune into the radio show and it's like some QAnon-themed conspiracy theory show. How upsetting that would be to realize that that's who you're married to.
It could have gone a lot of different ways. That would have been a terrible one. It could have been like, I'm trying plain donuts every day until I actually like them. Episode 180. I don't like them still.
Tonight's story, my honey girl with eyes like Bigfoot and hair like melted steel beams.
Oh, why? Why do my pictures of you always turn out blurry?
The next day at work, Grace reaches out to Yuki and they realize they are both obsessed with each other and the memory of the night they shared. They agree to keep calling each other. I like this part because on the other end of the line, it sounds like Yuki is working at a cafe, which I love. It's super realistic that they both have low income jobs and have to supplement their passion projects with retail. It's like too real.
Yeah, I like that. It makes me connect as a reader.
Eventually, Grace tells her sibling coworkers, Mira and Raj, whom she is very close with, about her marriage. They're also incredibly supportive. That's actually the majority of the book so far, is Grace saying she got drunk married and her friends not caring at all. It would be funny if there's no conflict, actually, and everybody she tells is just like, yeah, you're an adult. Go for it, girl.
Yeah, so far, nobody has had an issue with it. I mean, if you're thinking about Grace's relationships at this point, everybody absolutely adores her and loves her and is there for her in every way she needs to be, except for her dad. And so far, that's pretty much it. Like, it's either 100% perfect or 1,000% terrible.
And everybody loves her, like you said. Her coworkers, Mira and Raj, are brother and sister. And their relationship is kind of, like, unstated. Because they all three of them, like, cuddle together under the blankets. And I don't have friends like that. I live in Portland. I'm gay. But I don't – that's kind of a strange thing. Maybe it's that she's a woman. I know that women – sometimes have like physically more affectionate relationships than sometimes men do. But the idea of like me and my sister cuddling with one of our mutual friends in a bed under covers, that's really out there for me.
A situation where I'd find myself in like that would be we're in the Arctic and there's only the one tent and we only have the one sleeping bag and we will die unless we do a quick cuddle.
Then it extends to her roommates, Jimena and Agnes, because they all have kind of an interesting relationship as well, where they're sort of like friends who are kind of in love with each other, but not like sexually, just like romantically in love with each other. There's a big love fest going on in this apartment. In our final chapter, Grace meets with her old professor and mentor, Dr. McMillan. Yep, another new character. She acknowledges Grace's hard work and the challenges she faces as a Black woman in the STEM field. Dr. McMillan suggests that Grace take a break after her years and years of study, but Grace is reluctant to hit the pause button on her life. Later that night, she listens to Yuki's radio show live, and it's an episode about Plato's origin of love. I really like this story, possibly because I first heard it as a part of John Cameron Mitchell's rock musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch, where the myth is turned into a tender ballad sung by an androgynous queer punk rock band.
Did you just have a stroke? What the fuck are you talking about? Is that real?
Yeah, there's a rock musical movie called Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and they sing a song called The Origin of Love that's the Plato myth turned into like a rock ballad. It's very good.
Nice. That sounds awesome. I do want to say when you said Hedwig and the Angry Inch, I was thinking of Harry Potter's famous owl and a story about them hunting a worm early in the morning.
No, but you're not that far off from what the story actually is. The myth, for those of you who aren't reading along, goes like this. In the beginning, humans looked very different. They were two instead of one, with two sets of arms, two sets of legs, and two faces peering out of one giant head. Together, they were able to accomplish just about anything, which made the gods super jealous and fearful, and in an act of timeless douchiness, Zeus used his lightning to cut us all in half. Now, humanity wanders around looking for our other halves, destined to be alone until we find our perfect match. Something they don't explore in the novel is that Plato said that same-sex couples actually had it harder because they had so many fewer people to find as their perfect match.
They had fewer people to find?
Like, the group of people with which to look for your perfect half was much smaller because most people are straight.
Gotcha. Okay. I thought there was like kind of a 50-50 split between men and women in that. Anyway.
Plato also talked about how being gay was a really ugly sin, so who knows what was going on in that guy's head.
Yeah, Plato said a lot of shit. Like, I don't know if we should take it all to at face value now. Like, maybe dig into it a little bit.
This week's reading ends with Grace falling asleep, dreaming of her wife and longing for her company.
Yeah, so again, a lot of prep. A lot of, hey, get ready for the next set of reading.
I really like these chapters. Yeah, the pace is kind of slow, but it has this dreamy atmosphere, and I appreciate the solid support group that Grace has built for herself.
Yeah, it's nice. I feel like I'm not going to get much conflict from this, which is fine. You know, we can have a book without much conflict. She'll find her wife. They realize they do love each other, and they get married and move together.
Well, Yuki's radio show is cool, but I can't wait for them to meet in real life and see how compatible or not they are, because I think they're kind of still in love with an idea of each other, and maybe it being long distance and being kind of mysterious is more interesting than the actual human being on the other end of the line with all of their hangups and issues.
Yeah, because really what the one time they hung out, they were blasted in Vegas. So we'll see, you know, see if the magic is still there. At least they're clicking on the phone so far. So that's a good step.
Obviously, her dad is going to find out and flip his nut.
Yeah, once the dad finds out, I think it's going to be conflict central, and we'll deal with that, and she'll realize, oh wait, I actually don't really need my dad's approval.
It was just kind of frustrating to have her like tell one friend she's okay with it. Let's keep it a secret from our third friend. Third friend knows she's okay with it. Now I'm gonna tell my other friends, guess what, they're okay with it. And it just feels like a lot of the conflict is almost assumed. It's a lot of this, you know, Grace Porter's malaise. She's like having a hard time finding a job in the STEM field because she hits some like racial barriers. You know, they act really rude to her in this interview and she walks out. But like, she has a job waiting for her at Dr. McMillan's lab that she refuses to take. She chooses to work at a tea shop for presumably not very much money when there's a job offer sitting there. And I don't really think her life is all that bad.
It seems self-inflicted. In a pretty large chunk of it. Like, you're right. She has a job lined up in her field that she doesn't want to take because she wants to make it on her own, which respectable. But again, like, you can make it on your own by building your resume at this job and then moving forward in your field. It feels self-inflicted, a lot of this conflict.
And her mother is not out of the picture. Her mother lives in Florida and owns like an orange orchard where she could also go and work if she wanted to take some time off and, you know, bask in the glow of this beautiful orange field.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next time with some more Honey Girl story. But for now, I came up with a little game for you, honey boy.
Ooh, something to play. This is what this B-boy likes.
So what I've done is I've taken reviews from Goodreads for Honey Girl. And through an advanced scientific algorithm, I have run them through Google Translate about 15 times through endless languages. And it spat them back out into English. I'm going to read you the spat out English reviews, and I want you to tell me how many stars you think the original review gave to the book.
I love it. This is something I feel like I'm going to have some natural talent at. Let's do this thing.
Okay. And these are not professional reviews. If you don't know, Goodreads is all community-based reviews for books. So without further ado, this is a game I like to call Jumblebee.
Oh, nice. I like it. Slipping another B pun.
Here's our first review. I'm not saying this book is right. The only thing I can think of in this book is, I still love it. How many stars?
4 out of 5 stars. That sounds positive.
You were very close. That was a full 5 out of 5 star review.
That was a they five. That was a fiver.
5 out of 5, yeah.
It's good to set that bar early. I know what to rank against now.
Initial reactions. Diving is very easy in summer. At first, I was interested, but I didn't have any hope, but I didn't think of it. What I liked. I hoped so, but instead, it led to an internal struggle for good between him and his father. At first, blondes are all dirty, I thought. I think the emotion in this book reveals the whole story. There is diversity, and Caucasians can be easily identified. What I liked about this is that some of these are actually kind of like, I get what you're trying to say, kind of.
Caucasians are easily identified. That's just a fucking true statement right there.
There is diversity.
There is diversity, period.
This book reveals the whole story. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I'm going to go with 4 again, just because like it felt positive again, but there were some issues he brought up, like the problems with between the man and the father.
This is a little bit more tepid. You were close again. It was 3 out of 5.
I should have gone with my gut.
Grace Porter. As long as he spends drunken nights in Vegas and marries a beautiful woman he just met, who smells herbs and centuries, he studies, plans, and organizes his life as a tea. And that's like tea, like the drink. This girl, Yuki, runs a night radio station full of mysterious subjects that makes me happy every time I broadcast.
This one's hard to pin down. I'm going to go with 3 stars on this one. It feels tepid, I guess.
This one's really unfair. This was a 1-star review. They did not like this.
It did not come across in the review. For the most part, it felt that maybe they were just explaining what happened in book.
Yeah, that was perhaps lost in translation, but isn't it all? Be creative, romantic, and creative. Grace Porter, or Porter, grew rapidly throughout her life, and almost everyone called her and studied hard to earn her doctorate. In the end, it's all about size. Her father set her goals more, and there is nothing more important than that. 9 years after committing suicide, he realized that some things just don't work out. A coming-of-age novel that includes some really important topics, including sad, it shall be burned, mental health, discrimination in action, GLAT, more than friend, and a broken family.
If there's one thing I know going through puberty, Mac, it shall be burned.
How'd it get burned?
It did. I don't, doesn't matter how. It shall be burned.
I love his important topics, including sad.
The tough thing with the review for these is they're not telling how they feel about it. For the most part, it's a lot of description.
Yeah, that's a problem on Goodreads for sure.
Based off the fact that there was so much description and they talked about the sad, I'm thinking it's a 4-star.
4 out of 5, Lucky. You got it.
Oh, ding, 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 finally.
Or should I say
bzzz. Got one.
A beautiful young girl's book. Is this a new kind of novel? For unknown reasons. The writing is full of comparisons. Each idea, each relationship, and each concept is clearly defined. I really like this book, so it was hard for me to read it. Definitely recommended for people who like to write poetry. And poetry. I think it's amazing he is looking for. Good journalists like to use the name lesbian, and that is the first way to do it. I need a plane.
I need a plane. I just like a little bit on there just personal in my life, right? I love leaving a review, and at the very end, like, I would like a sandwich.
Good journalists like to use the name lesbian, I think is a great description of the book.
I learned that in my journalist class in high school. I'm going to say 2 out of 5. I think some of that was lost in translation. I think this is a negative review.
This was a 3 out of 5, so somewhat tepid.
Okay. Yeah, middle of the bridge, hump day. Am I right?
Hell, don't hit me with it. There is so much in this book. Conversely, the protagonist's family has the idea of seeing me as an adult. But for me, she is surrounded by bad habits. For me, this book is a very small and serious book about relationships and relationships. Their first thought was so horrible that no one thought they were drunk. Writing it, using love, for example, often comes to mind.
Wow, powerful. Powerful opinion there.
I love how this review starts with, hell, don't hit me with it. Yeah. It's like, that's a good way to start any review.
Yeah, it's great. It catches the eye. Any author would read that. I'm going to say 3 out of 5 on this one. Doesn't seem very positive. She has some issues with it.
Unfortunately, you rated this one a little too high. This is a 2 out of 5.
Damn, this is the negative. Well, unfortunately, it's all about reviews, so no one's too negative in the review. I'm just defending myself because I'm embarrassed.
All right, well, your score was 2 correct and 5 incorrect, I'm afraid.
Okay, you didn't really have to say that and put me on blast on the show, but that's fine.
Unfortunately, that's a failing grade, and we will be replacing you in the podcast.
Oh, good, I get my Sundays back.
Next week, we've got auditions. If you would like to audition to be a part of the GRBN family, you may send us a full resume with references and a $20 bill to grbooknook@gmail.com. We are on Twitter, Instagram. You can find us there at grbooknook.
And share the show with your friends. You know, we're not going to get that $20 just from our listeners. We need you to let them know that we're doing this great thing out here. We're reviewing romance. We're diving into it where you don't have to. Let your friends know. Have them listen along with us. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, we need their money too. Yeah, please share the show with your friends. We don't advertise in any way, so word of mouth is the only way more people are going to listen to this fabulous show.
I'd like to take a second to say thank you for our new music, Cali by Wadaboy. What an incredible song, Mac. I think
Wadaboy.
I think this one's going to get me going for the next 2 months, easy.
Yeah, party time. We'll have plenty of time to listen to it. Our next episode is going to be out on August 27th. You can come back for more B puns at that time.
So, okay. I love that sign off, but I do actually want to circle back on B puns because I don't really feel like I got my fill during the episode. Are you cool with that? Or
okay. Yeah. All right. Let me make a deal with you. Can make B puns, as many B puns as we can, but the first time one of us laughs, we stop.
Okay. That sounds good. I'm worried it's going to be me, but let's try it out.
Okay. All right. Get the laughter out of your system now because it's going to be okay. Steel face for this next part.
I'll do my natural laugh that I don't do on the podcast. Okay. I'm ready. Mac, what is a bee's favorite novel?
I don't know, Lucky. What is a bee's favorite novel?
The Great Gatsby.
Hilarious. What do kiddo bees take to school?
What?
The school buzz.
Damn it. Gotcha. I knew it. It's the long-term buzz that gets me, you know, just like in life.